This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Raslan, today we have BFM's very own Lee Tree Lin.
Hello, Cam.
Once of BFM, then not, and then back again.
Yes, yeah. Fully returned.
I knew it was going to happen. And we have the return of, from his whirlwind tour of Java, singer-songwriter and educator, Azmu Yunor.
Hello, hi.
How was your tour?
Excellent, man.
Yeah?
Lots of tempeh.
Well, tempeh is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Tempeh is chips it, there, man.
I feel really? It's underrated.
I'm not that keen on it.
You see, you just haven't
lived.
You're not
Javanese, man.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm not. Okay. Our three topics this week. Topic number one is obsessions. Topic number two, Hey Jude. And topic number three, teaching semiotics. So, Lynn. Obsessions.
Yeah. So I've been spending a little bit of time with toddlers recently, and I think anybody who's been around those little things will know that they pick up obsessions at an alarming rate. You know, they kind of fixate on things, and then for a little while, that's all they want to talk about. And I remember reading an article earlier in the year as well saying that basically, you know, that dinosaur obsession that all kids go through, usually at some point, apparently that has value because it makes them feel smarter than their parents. It teaches them the value of having sort of a single interest. It's associated with higher levels of intelligence, things like that. And I was just thinking about myself as an adult and how I still obsess. I mean, I'm still like a fan of things, but a lot of it has faded. I think my obsession stamina seems to have run out as like daily life has piled on, and I don't have the energy anymore to participate in it as much as I used to.
What were your obsessions back in the day, and how old were you then?
Back in the day, well, I never really did a dinosaur thing or cars, but I was really, really into serial killers for a time. I was really into Elvis for a time.
How old were you?
Serial killers, I think. Ironically, there's an overlap. I think that would have been when I was about, I think maybe between 11 to 15 or something. I was really into that. Okay. I'm not alone in the serial killer thing, to be fair. I've met many a person who seems to have had that youthful obsession with them.
But on those anonymous sort of Reddit accounts, whatever.
Just in general. I used to rent books. Anyway. Right. Yeah, and then most recently, I got really into Hamilton for a bit, you know. Elvis was about the same, 11 to 15.
And we're talking about everyday Elvis, Elvis, Elvis.
Elvis, I bought fan magazines. They used to be available at SBL, bookshop in SS2. And I hung posters. I read about him. I memorized, like, you know, his birthday, the name of his twin, just all that Elvis stuff. Mm. I felt really saddened by his death, even though it happened way before I was born. Mm. And yeah, I just don't have the same energy for it anymore. And I feel a certain sense of loss. I was wondering if I could get commiserations.
Well, you know, funny, I was feeling the same kind of thing. I was feeling the actually, I had an obsession very recently. And when I had the obsession, it reminded me of those back in the day times.
That feeling, right?
That feeling, yeah. And it was actually very moving and it kind of strangely sort of youth connecting.
What was your obsession?
Well, it was my recommendation on A Bit of Culture last week, I think. This guy on YouTube called Josh Turner.
Okay.
Josh Turner guitar. And he plays guitar and he sings covers, but incredible arrangements. And he's a great guitarist. And he's got like 200 videos, and I was watching them all. And he's so fantastic. Mm. But also is the community as well, looking at the comments.
Yeah,
there's a lot
yeah.
of love there and feeling that I was part of it. Well, I wasn't crazy, you know? I found it very moving because it was like, yeah, like you say, this is what I was like back then when I was that guy's age. Yeah, Asmil, are you?
Well, I'm trying to think back. Well, what's been there a while? Maybe highways.
Like famous highways or
no, just
highways?
Just the infinite possibility of going somewhere.
Actually, I really love highways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to take photos of highways.
Yes, do you have a favorite highway?
My favorite highway? Well, maybe the one I've kind of like put in my song. Yeah, the Plus Highway.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm investor in that highway. I've been paying the toll since 1994.
But are you just
invested in it?
Are you talking obsession in the same way that Lynn? I mean, you think about it.
While you were talking about obsession, I was just trying to recall back, like, obsession, okay, what do I have? But I've noticed that, yeah, there's certain things that I always associate with that. Music, songs, or films. Mm. Road movies. I love road movies. And again, the constant symbolism is roads, highways.
So Lynn, I mean, don't you have an equivalent in your dotage, in your old age?
In my ancient 30s. No, I mean, I do, but they come and go. And I will always love Elvis. When I hear an Elvis song, when I see him on the TV, I still feel that same pull. But I just feel like my stamina for it has gone. And, you know, I'm no longer somebody who's going to fall down an internet hole in the same way as I used to.
No, come on.
I don't know. It's not as naturally occurring as it used to be. It used to be that I didn't have to go looking for obsessions. They found me, you know.
So, and you're disappointed in yourself?
Are you a little bit, yes. I feel like I understand a little bit more what it feels like to become a boring routine adult. And I didn't think I would get there.
Well, are you distracted by routine?
I don't think it's that so much as just, you know, daily life gets in the way. The things that you think about become more like, okay, what do I have to do today? What do I have to cook later? Okay. You know, as opposed to Elvis's twin.
I guess it depends on what you're obsessed with. Like I'm lucky that I'm obsessed with highways because I have no choice but to take them every day.
So every day
I'm excited. Yeah. You know, getting on the road. Wow.
You know? See. Well, I mean, the beauty of a bit of culture is that we've had a lot of people come here and talk their way through midlife crisis, Lynn. So you're in good company. You're amongst friends.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
Asmil, on the other hand, he's in an eternal childhood because he sees a highway and he gets excited.
Yeah, I'm very excitable. Yeah.
Like your nephews and nieces with dinosaurs.
Yeah. I mean, my son is obsessed with fans. Before he could speak, he would just say, Ain. What's pointing at fans? I visit one day in Sarawak, so I go back to Longhouse. They stay there for a while sometimes, so I go back there. First thing he sees me, he just points to the fan. He doesn't see like, hey, daddy. And I was like, okay, so yeah, so he's just, now he can say the word fan. So my brother, when he was young, he was obsessed by streetlights. So now he became architect. So
all right.
I think what I'm finding with obsessions is that state of obsessiveness has been replaced by a state of intense and constant curiosity. So I have that. I'm curious about small things. So for me, a highway is like a small curiosity. I wonder who made it? How long has it been going? I love the Karak Highway. I have a real fondness for that one. But it's not the same level as I used to have. And I don't know, maybe this is just growing up. I just wanted to mourn a little bit.
You're coming out the other side of the midlife crisis. You've worked it out already. It's great.
Wonderful. Gosh, this series is amazing. Therapy.
I think we've helped Lynn.
I'm a little bit worried I'm going to die young now that you've called this point in my life midlife, but okay.
Well, I had fully formed thoughts. I remember when Elvis died.
Okay.
He died when I was born.
I thought you were like the same age as me. Oh my God, it's
fairly not.
You're both making me feel better. This works. Thank you.
Okay, well, with that, talking of old age, topic number two, Hey Jude, take a sad song and make it better. Yeah. It happens to be the 50th anniversary of the release of Hey Jude, the Beatles classic. And that's started quite a bit of looking back on it. One newspaper recently called it the Beatles' greatest, most open-hearted masterpiece.
Wow.
And it is, I think, pretty much my favorite song. I know it's there, and David Bowie's Heroes, they kind of fight with each other all the time. And producer Ali is very disappointed in me. But it's one of those, it's kind of cheesy. I accept that. And I only listen to it on my own. And I get quite emotional when I listen to it on my own.
Whoa.
I'll listen to Heroes in public because, it's just like, cool, come on.
It's a cultural capital. I mean, it makes you cool. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. But Hey Jude, you kind of feel a little bit embarrassed, but it's a great song.
Why should we?
Well, why indeed? Why? Because the look that Lee Tree Lynn has right now, that's why.
Oh. You're making me feel bad for what I said to you earlier. Okay, so to come clean, I hate Hey Jude. It is my least favorite. You're really there in my least favorite Beatles songs. I really dislike it.
Wow.
I mean, it makes you just angry.
It makes me, you know what? It has bored me since childhood. And I'm wondering again with the, you know, to go back to the death of Elvis, such as it is, whether or not this is again an age difference coming into play, because I grew up on the Beatles. They were my version of road trip lullabies. You know, we didn't necessarily always listen to kids' songs. We would listen to the Beatles. And Hey Jude just bored the living daylights out of me every time it came on. I just wanted it to end. And instead, I have to hear na, 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 na for 10 minutes.
It does go on beautifully.
Beautifully, you say. Yeah, so...
I want it to never end.
I want it to never have been born.
Asmil, where do you stand on...
I'm indifferent.
Indifferent.
Yeah.
Both of these answers are not good. Yeah. Because one of the reasons I like it, and many reasons why, is it's a very big song.
Okay.
And I think that there are not that many big songs. Like, I'm trying to find a way to describe it. Epic, torch song, And I would put in the same category as songs which I'm not so keen on, but I see their impact, which would be, say, Bruce Springsteen's kind of Born to Run. Mm-hmm. It's a huge song. Perhaps even maybe Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, things which are really, the songwriter is reaching for, has the courage to just go for it, go for greatness.
All right.
And you must respect that.
See, I never thought they were going for greatness. I thought that he was writing a really boring song to Julian Lennon, which he should probably just have sung to him in private and never...
Paul wrote it, right?
Why
do you even have to ask that question? Yeah. Paul wrote it. Yes, Paul McCartney wrote it.
Just reaffirming.
My least favorite Beatle. We're really...
Yeah, George was my favorite Beatle,
I'm between George and John.
I'm not arguing with that. I mean, as I get older, I'm finding myself drawn to Paul McCartney in a way that before... It was not cool. I'm being uncool. And I'm being uncool.
But Paul's dead, right?
You're being sentimental.
Paul is dead.
That's the rumor.
That was a rumor back in 1968.
You're being sentimental. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I have plenty of songs that I'm really, really deeply sentimental about that I know objectively, you know, might not be the best songs in the world, but they mean a lot to me. And I think, Hey Jude, you happen to be with, I suppose, the majority. I will always stand firm. I have never enjoyed that song.
But is there an Elvis song, say, that kind of gets you in the way that I think you maybe appreciate that, like, Hey Jude and Heroes Get Me?
Well, just as a song, for example, I think Always On My Mind is a great song. But I appreciate that it's cheesy and it's, you know, it's kind of dated. I don't think it's an Elvis original even. I think it's Willie Nelson. So, you know, it's also really, really cheesy and really, really sentimental, but I love that song.
I'm busking that song. Yeah.
But you can, I mean, given the right set of circumstances, brings a tear to your eye kind of thing?
Always On My Mind?
Yeah.
Could, yeah, maybe.
Wow. Hey Jude brings a tear.
Don't look at me like that. I walked into this thinking I'm normal.
I think you are. In all fairness, I think most people...
So patronizing.
I'm sorry. Reaching across the table. Reaching across the aisle here. I think most people do have a great fondness for Hey Jude. I don't think our indifference and outright hatred are representative of how most people react to that song. You're okay, Cam. You're fine.
I had so many facts and stuff to bring into this, but they've all evaporated because I'm just so hurt and disappointed. No, but I would say one thing is that Paul McCartney and the Beatles came from a tradition of a British music hall tradition where songs were designed to be sung by enormous crowds. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm forever blowing bubbles kind of things. Like songs that you now hear at football matches, You'll Never Walk Alone. And that tradition is also kind of gone. People, I don't think, write songs now for big crowds. I mean, Asma, you write songs. Do you ever sort of deliberately design things which are like, oh, the whole crowd's going to like sing along with this?
Yeah, I mean, just lyrics with oh.
That works, is it?
Yeah, that's very universal. Like, you know. So there's no excuse for you not sing along.
Yeah.
So Even a tone deaf person can do it.
Even if you can't hear, it's like, all right. Okay.
What you're saying is...
Yeah, but whether it's grand in size, I don't know, because the Malaysian scene is pretty... I mean, venues can't accommodate such...
So you're just belittling Paul McCartney. No.
Can I just say, having given it a little bit of thought, the song for me that falls into the category you're describing is Let It Be. I didn't used to love it. It also used to be something that I thought was boring when I was a child. And now, very often, I'm very touched by it. So there is that.
Mm. Good. I'm going to stop there because I fear that either of you two are going to say something which is going to upset me after that. But I'm going to go with that one.
Let it be.
Let it be. Right, good. Phew. You are human. And in a moment, we shall return with part two and topic number three here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Lee Tree Lin, and Asmil Yunor. And now, Asmil, teaching semiotics.
Yeah.
What's semiotics?
Study of signs. Not road signs, but signification and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason why I brought it up, because I was just teaching to my students the last 2 weeks that topic. Nobody wants to teach that sort of theory subjects, but I teach a film and performing arts program. So I realized the thing about when you study signs, you unpack a lot of assumptions that we make about everyday life. It actually incites a lot of criticality in students. I find it's very hard to get students to think critically anymore now. I've been teaching that long. I've seen this gradual change. In terms of criticality.
Mm-hmm.
Not just academically, but it's really just thinking about their own practices in their everyday life. Yeah.
Students, we're talking about...
University students. But I'm surprised that a lot of media and communication or the field, which you will stumble into semiotics.
Absolutely.
Or you study languages. is not sort of emphasized. It's buried as a topic.
And you find a lack of interest?
I'm not lack of interest. Students often do look interested when you're studying to deconstruct things, right? Unpacking things. Of course, then they try to remember what is what. Then you see the rote learning coming in. You know, what's a signifier, etc.
Right.
But for me, that's not so important. I think it's just to allow them to think that I'm quite structuralist in that way, to think that, you know, the world's structured a certain way. And unpacking the habits, really.
Yeah.
I studied semiotics in university, and I remember also, I guess the beginning of that would have been a very brief unit on an introduction to critical thinking, it was called. in a diploma program. And it was also, I remember that moment. I mean, I grew up as a reader, I'm not unaccustomed to thinking of symbolism, right? And to kind of unpacking things in that way. And I studied literature in high school. So there was that practice. But I remember that for people who are new to it, it's really interesting to watch what happens when you try to teach critical thinking. It's an interesting skill to try to learn, because people need to, I think, in a way, gain a flexibility in their heads that they may not always have had.
But also, envision practical use of this, this wizardry.
Yeah.
I was introduced to it. I mean, I was already on the road to wanting to be a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came across, I think, the godfather of semiotics, Roland Barthes, and his book Mythologies, and how, for instance, one chapter he wrote about how come in all Hollywood movies, Romans always have their hair combed forwards.
Yeah.
You know, why do we just instinctively think that's
the Roman way.
That's Roman way. Yeah, yeah. And you see, I was like, oh, that's a Roman. And then he had a chapter on wrestling and stuff like that, which I don't remember so well. And it was told to me that, you know, oh, if you want to be in film, if you want to be in advertising, all these things where you need to find a secret way to
it's like encoding things.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. Yeah. I mean, when you were talking about movies, I was just thinking about white hats and black hats. Mm. You know, it's kind of that simple, right? Yeah, a man rides into town. Is he wearing a white hat? Yeah. Is he wearing a black hat?
Yeah, exactly.
You know who he's going to be. And a part of it is also trying to understand what you already know.
Yes.
Yeah. And then taking in new information. And that process is also really interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating because we live in such a hyper-visual, hyper-real world now because of visuality, smartphones, images, etc. A child grows up seeing things visually, you know, and it's different from, I suppose, when I say we grew up. Visuality was limited to certain mediums, but now it's all around you. I mean, because of this new media. Well, they don't call it new media anymore. It's not new.
It's not new anymore.
Media. This is media. I think it is more critical for that sort of paradigm to be shaped into, I think, students or even just general public.
Mm.
You know, what are you reading for fun?
Well, I think that we're all, you know, using the tools of semiotics, even if we don't necessarily give it that word.
Yep, yep.
In the old days when we used to listen to or watch advertising and we used to be aware of it, we were always thinking, am I going to fall for this or not?
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, these images are faking it,
yes.
But this is like legitimate or something.
Yeah, I mean, my dad, in a way, introduced me to semiotics without the word semiotics. We used to, after dinner, watch television and the ads come up. And my dad would say, like, why is that? Is that real? Or what was this?
Yeah.
So that is. I mean, like you said, but that practice of just questioning, and that's completely lacking with our students now, because we don't, philosophy is not taught anyway. And you tell, when I was in Indonesia, I told some friends who were from a university then they had a faculty of philosophy. So I said, you know, Malaysia, we don't have anything like that. It's like, whoa, they're surprised.
Yeah, because, the parents who can afford to send their kids off to do philosophy, they send them off overseas to do philosophy.
But that's a funny thing. Every second kid I met at a gig when we were touring with Bayangan in Indonesia, every second kid we met was studying anthropology.
Really?
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's their default, like, mass comm. In Malaysia, every second kid you meet is studying mass comm.
Or business.
Over there, or business. Over there is anthropology.
Really?
One singer-songwriter who played with, his name was Oscar Lolang. And he said, what are you doing? Anthropology. This guy in Semarang who was organizing, what are you studying? Anthropology.
Wow.
So, I mean, I guess it's the way we see the subjects. I mean, like you said, exactly in Malaysia, the perception, if it's philosophy, it's kind of like fancy. And you go, bro, what kind? You can come back, find a job with a degree in philosophy.
But there's also the fact that anthropology, to some degree, is about the study of man, right?
Yeah,
you know, and I think if you come from a country with a strong background in philosophy, identity, and also sort of, it's got a lot of history, then maybe studying anthropology makes a more natural sense.
True.
Whereas our history, I'm not saying it's short, it's not short, but what we get to study of it is quite different and very, very firmly shaped. I mean, I don't know. I feel as if, while we're talking about semiotics, right, the places we think of in the Malaysian imagination are very set in stone about what they mean. You know, if you think about places like, I don't know, Tugu Negara or KLCC, they're very, very set. You look at it and generally it has one set of meaning, and it's got that set of meaning because it's been indoctrinated into us, this is what this means. And so maybe the study of man in a setting like that makes less sense or is of less interest.
I think we need to emphasize that.
I agree, completely.
Because we overlook this.
Interesting point. Because, actually, you're right. I mean, the landscape, we are sold on the idea that the landscape here is new. And
single meaning.
Single meaning. Whereas when I first went to Indonesia, I was instantly shocked at how this was a nation. Yeah. There was one, very clear of itself as a nation, but also that it had history. And culture, and they were very proud of that.
I mean, one simple thing, I'll just take the satay. You go, never show off to go in and say, hey, Malaysian satay, it's great. No, because they have like 20 types of satay or more. And, you know, it's different. They've got satay, it's not in peanut sauce, it's in with ketchup, you know, soy sauce. And I had this really interesting satay in Jogja, a friend brought me there. It's called satay katak. And it's actually made, the sticks is bicycle spokes. So the meat gets cooked inside, and it's lamb and doesn't taste, smell or like lamb. I'm thinking of the history of why the spokes. Maybe hard times, no spokes, you know, bicycles, you know. But again, that blew me away. I mean, it's just a cross, right? Yeah. And we overlook our neighbors, that we were actually one Nusantara. So it's almost like I long for that, I suppose. Every time we go there, feeling like, wow, this is natural there. Criticality is natural there. People talk about it. Whereas here, you got to go to university and to then only be critical. I think we're missing something.
Okay. Yeah. We must move on, but can I just ask, Azmil, what do you teach?
I teach a lot of media and culture studies subjects.
That is the official title.
Theory subjects. Right. Subjects people don't want to teach. I like teaching those. Give it to me.
What was your degree?
I majored in film and television and journalism.
And Lynn, what was your degree?
I majored in media studies and performing arts.
Okay, so there's semiotics. Look it up.
Hashtag semiotics.
No, but really, once I was introduced to Roland Barthes, I was told that there was this thing called semiotics. Suddenly the whole world looked
different, right?
And really interesting. And there were layers to everything and things connected.
Because everything's coded. And now you've been given the code break. It's cool.
And then you laugh at everything. For me, it's that. So, you're less stressed up. I think people should learn semiotics. It's a good stress reliever.
And now, though, we move on to the final part, right? Recommendations.
Recommendation.
Where we recommend something we think might be of interest. And Lynn's going first.
Okay, I have a more straightforward stress reliever than reading semiotics on the MRT. So there's this podcast. It's called My Dad Wrote a Porno. I don't know if I've recommended it here before, if someone else has. It is as the title says. It's what it says on the tin. There's a guy, his father, under the pseudonym Rocky Flintstone, wrote the most ludicrous porno starring Belinda. You know, the title of the porno is Belinda Blinked. And it's just a series of pornographic books in which a woman who is a saleswoman at steals pots and pans. So she sells pots and pans, kind of delves into the seedy underworld of kitchenware. And it's as ludicrous as it sounds. And he is an awful writer. So basically, the guy who runs the podcast, Jamie, he's got two friends, James and Alice, and they come together. And every week they read one chapter and they break down exactly how ludicrous it is. And it's hilarious because they're old friends, so that helps. It's, you know, they're old friends, they all know the dad in question, so they all make fun of him, and it's just wonderful. It's been running for quite some time now. We're in season 4, which is great for people who are catching up now, because it means you have 3 seasons.
So season 4, and it's still the same?
No, season 4, same characters, but it's book 4. So they're following book 1, book 2, book 3, book 4. He wrote them all in a hurry several years ago. So the typos and the sort of illogical leaps in story, they haven't been fixed according to critique, because they were written as a bunch. They're great. It's so funny. It's one of the few things that make me laugh out loud.
It's a podcast smash hit.
It is.
Very, I haven't listened to it yet myself, but it's very popular. It's from America, isn't it?
No, it's British.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it's British. And it's quite British in humor. I mean, overall, it's good. Listen to one episode. If you don't like it, I don't know you. You know, it's really good.
Right. Wow. Okay, so that's... Sorry, my dad wrote a porno.
Yes.
Never thought I'd say that on air.
I know.
Right. Well, okay, so my recommendation is, in the face of the cynicism and the indifference that I've experienced today whilst talking about Hey Jude, my recommendation is on a simpler note of simpler times. If you have any care for the Beatles at all, you may or may not have, don't shake your head, or even if you don't have any care for the Beatles at all, you must have seen it already. If you haven't, you've just got to watch it. It's a sort of interview or carpool karaoke, I believe it's called, with James Corden and Paul McCartney. And they're in Liverpool and they're going back to his, Paul McCartney's roots. And in many cases, for the first time, he's done it since he was back in the 60s.
It was a great episode.
Yeah. Oh.
Let It Be was beautiful. Yeah. In that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of earlier, actually.
Yeah. Because she has a soul.
You know, I've had it with this. Hey Jude is not that good a song. It's not worth it, Cam.
Okay. And yeah, I just think that it's a great insight. It's very moving. But also, we're very lucky that, I mean, you know, the Beatles are a big deal, actually, at the end of the day. And they've written hundreds of songs, which are very famous and everything. And two of them have since died, and so we cannot hear from them. But we still have the opportunity to hear some insights from one of the people who wrote these songs back 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a great chance to catch up on these things. So James Corden's Carpool Karaoke with Paul McCartney. Nice. I don't care what you think of me.
I said it was a good episode.
I wasn't looking at you. It's really great. Brought a tear to my eye.
Sweet.
So, Azmil.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, this might get censored. I went on a CD spree in Indonesia. CDs are cheaper there. And there's still record shops, not shutting down like here. So I picked up a CD by this Yogyakarta band called Melancholic Bitch. So it's a post-punk band. But the lyrics are very interesting. So the album is called NKKBS Bagian Pertama, which I think is a reference to apparently Suharto's policy on family. Wow. Where, do you know that Indonesia actually China had that whole one-child policy thing. So Indonesia had something similar to control the population. So never crossed my mind. How can you write an album? An album about that policy. And it's a really catchy album. Mm-hmm. Lyrically, it's very literary. Brilliant. I thought. So this was first time. I mean, I had heard of this band before, the name. So, but it's the first time I just picked it up among the CDs I bought, and I've just been playing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I came another day, it might be another CD, that one of it. But this is just on rotation now, so I recommend this. It just blows me away that, you know, it's me just longing, wow, when can we have a similar sort of team album?
Later? Yeah. Well, when they make sure they give themselves nice names.
And they study semiotics.
Yes, yeah. Well, names that we don't have to beep out here on A Bit of Culture.
I don't think we had those kinds of standards here on this show. We're like that now?
I don't know. I really don't know. But so with that in mind, I'm going to ask you one more time. What's the name of the band?
Melancholic Bitch.
Okay. And with that, only remains for me now to thank our special honored guest, Azmil Yunor.
Merci, thank you for having me.
Do you have any gigs or anything you want to tell us about?
I've got a show coming up on Malaysia Day, Bangkong Row.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 16 September. Then I'm doing a double set with Bayangan at Merdekaria on the 19th of September. Yeah.
All right.
So come by.
Come by, kids.
Let's talk semiotics.
Yeah. Take notes. Yeah. It'll come up in the exam. It's that kind of gig. Yeah. And Lee Trelin.
Thank you.
Welcome back to A Bit of Culture and BFM.
Thank you very much.
And myself, Cam Ruslan. Please like our Facebook page. We'll see you next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.